It's about the bigger topic, and the book is sort of that piece of credibility that helps Tom and Steve, you know, separate them or differentiate them from other financial professionals, for them to say, hey, I'm the author of. It shows a journalist that, you know, okay, they've got some credibility behind them because they wrote this book, but really we're playing into the bigger topic. And when you look at money, it's everywhere. It's all over the media, and it's not going away.
Podcasting from WealthWave Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, this is Leadership Now, the official vision and strategy podcast of WealthWave.
Okay, so I just got to start out before we get into our interview saying that when we were in the green room before the show, I bet Tom there's no way he could do that in 20 minutes. And I said, I can do it in 20 minutes. You know, Tom, I can do it in 20 minutes. That's what he said. I said, you can. He says, I can. And so it was 27 minutes, so I bet him a free lunch. That's the fastest I've ever heard Tom Matthews talk. Would you agree? Bubba, I mean, that was the fastest Tom Long ever on, but he gets the free lunch. What people will do for a free lunch.
Was it under 20 minutes, though?
27.
20, okay.
Yeah. 27.
He's still qualified. Okay. That's still the fastest I've ever
heard. Plus or minus, you know.
Man, you didn't take a breath.
Well, you know. It's important.
I know. Just the free lunch, you mean.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, exactly. We are really excited today. We've been talking about, you know, Bruce Irvin and the publicity campaign, of course, for months here, it seems like. And so we've got him here. And I met Bruce Irvin about 10 years ago. I've had publicists over the last 22 years or so for my speaking and writing career. And there's always this thing about, you know, you have to have a New York publicist or an L.A. publicist. It's sort of the coast thing, I guess, and that's the big thing with publicists. And Bruce is not either one of those. I've had both. He's not either one of those. He's actually from Florida, and he is the most successful publicist in our industry by far. And we've had some unbelievable. He really changed my career, changed my life, and we're looking for him to do the exact same thing. No pressure.
No pressure.
For how money. So welcome to the show, Bruce. Glad you're making it up
thanks.
From Florida.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah. Nice to be here. Excellent. Thanks. So tell us a little bit about what your. I know you've read the How Money Works book. What's your first impression of what you think this book can do in the media?
I love it because it's so, you know, simple. Like somebody who doesn't understand money, doesn't understand how money works, can pick this book up. And it breaks it down, you know, with the cartoon characters and the easy language. It just explains money like I've never seen it before. So I think it's going to be really, really good.
What do you think the potential is in terms of national media? Because I know you have your hand on the pulse of this, obviously, every day.
I mean, it's huge because, as you know, from the last 10 years, I mean, money is... been one of the greatest topics for you and me in the media, and it's still going, and unfortunately it's never going to end, and you know, maybe this book will change that, but for the media side of it, I hope it doesn't, so we can keep it going forever. But you know, I think we're just going to keep picking up, you know, where we've been, and you know, nationally, locally, all over the place. That's the goal, is to put this book, you know, and to increase those slides like you were just showing, you know, with all those media logos as much as possible.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
I'm always fascinated when how you take a news cycle, something that somebody says. There was an article by Draymond Green, the basketball player, about how much he'd like to be worth one day, and somehow that became an article that needed a quote from you. And so Steve Seibold has a quote in a basketball Draymond Green article. That was just genius to me. And then the little piece you have that shows how many people were projected to see it and what that was worth. It was worth millions.
It is.
In ad revenue if you had to go spend that.
Exactly. And you know, when you talk about ad revenue, this is, you know, forgetting the numbers for a minute, this is so much better than, you know, ads. This is totally different because let's face it, anybody can do an ad, right? Anybody can go to their local paper, their local TV station and run that ad. But when you're talking about publicity, not everybody can do that. And for those few chosen people who are regularly featured in the media, that credibility that comes from it, it's huge. It's absolutely huge.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah. One of the things that about this book is that it's very different than other Steve Seibold books, right?
Just a little bit, right?
Yeah, just a little bit different, right? So how,
you know, I drew all those characters. Right? Yeah, you guys know I drew those.
The painting, you're playing guitar and painting in your room. So how do you position a book like this that's so different than other books? You know, it's got some similar edge to it in terms of how it comes at the industry, counter what people are expecting to hear from it. So how do you position a book like this that's very different than another Steve Siebel.
Right. You know, compared, I think the biggest difference is, you know, in the past with a lot of Steve's books, you know, we've always been sort of that bad guy trying to stir things up, you know, if you will.
Yeah, a little
but
bit.
This book, you know, it's kind of, it takes the opposite approach where, you know, Steve and Tom, they're the heroes, right? They're coming in and they're trying to save the day. They're riding in on the horse trying to save everybody from financial illiteracy, okay. Trying to educate them about money. So I think right there, that's a little bit different, you know, for Steve than what we've done in the past. But as far as the book itself, you know, it's funny because Steve and I always joke about this. It's not always about the book, but it's about the bigger topic. And the book is sort of that piece of credibility that helps Tom and Steve, you know, separate them or differentiate them from other financial professionals. For them to say, hey, I'm the author of, it shows a journalist that, you know, okay, they've got some credibility behind them because they wrote this book. But really, we're playing into the bigger topic. And when you look at money, it's everywhere. It's all over the media, and it's not going away. So I think those are the two biggest things right there.
So what does it mean for him to be the good guy? Because good guys wear black. He's got his black shirt on,
yeah.
There, right? So
well, I think this time he's not going to get any death threats like
yeah.
in the
past. Yeah, exactly. I don't even know how to respond.
That's a good thing.
I'm a good guy.
Yeah, right.
I've had people
guy.
In the studios threaten me, the camera.
Yeah.
Remember that one time?
I remember that, yeah.
He threatened me right there. I'm like, that was off camera. I'm like, hey, come on, at least put it on camera.
Right. So I think it's going to be a lot easier this time, you know, because, you know, like I said, he's going to be the hero, and it's just, you know, we have fun when you go in as the bad guy and you're trying to stir things up. But if you can be the good guy, I mean, everyone's going to love you, and it's just going to make, I think, their life so much more easier.
When you guys go on, it's usually you and the host, mm-hmm. or one or two hosts, right? Is there ever an opportunity where it's you, someone from the industry, and then a host, and it gets kind of... Do you stir up the pot? Do you guys do that at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, tell them about the Newtown one. The Newtown shooting. Remember the Newtown shootings when I was on Hardball with Chris Matthews?
That's when you were being a bad guy trying to stir it up.
I got those, right? More death threats on that one. Yeah.
But yeah, so basically, you know, that interview wasn't about money. It was more about, you know, I think we were talking about guns.
Michael Smirkanish.
Yes, we're talking about, you know, gun control
issues.
How long ago was
this?
A couple years ago,
probably five or six.
Yeah, so
whatever Newtown was that shooting.
Right. So can I tell them the position you took?
Is that okay? Sure, yeah.
So basically, you know, after this shooting, Steve said to me, he says, you know, Bruce, I think every teacher in America needs to be armed. And I'm thinking, well, okay, that's different, right? I'm like, how many people are going to say
that? That's not exactly what you said.
Well, that's not exactly what I said. But
you PG'd it for on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Are you nuts?
But anyway, so knowing that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily agree, I mean, some people would agree with it, but not everybody would agree with that. So, you know, I went out to the media, and this producer at MSNBC came back to me, and they're like, does he really think that? Is that what he really, like, yeah, that's what he really thinks. And they brought him in that night. They brought him, you know, into Hardball, and they beat up on you pretty good.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
did. And
but we got tons of press.
We did.
Yeah.
We
was that fun for you?
You know, a little bit.
It was fun. He had fun. He
was a screw loose.
A little screw loose. All the wires are connected.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it helps with media.
It was fun. He had a good time. Trust me.
I can see that. You want to be part of the energy. It's good TV, first of all, right?
It is. You know, it's always good TV when you've got two people with differentiating views.
Yeah.
You know, one person in favor of something, one person, you know, who says the opposite.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for. Absolutely.
Do you think that this one where we say one thing and people have been doing the opposite, that may be the angle we end up taking with some of these, where everybody's got free will and a free chance to do this. You just got to know about it first. And I think this may end up having, the bad guy of this may be the system that didn't teach these people this when they were younger.
Right.
Maybe the schools. Or maybe you know, parents didn't know, so they couldn't really teach their kids. So it's been this epidemic of a lack of knowledge that we're now proposing to fix. And and if that was fixed for most people, that would remedy so many of the financial things that are going on in people's lives and the challenge. Everybody's not an athlete. Everybody's not a CEO of a company. So most people have a normal job with a normal wage. They're not an entrepreneur. They're not ever gonna be able to retire. And so this could be their best chance.
Yeah, and you know, I think you just hit the nail on the head right there. You know, like, I'm looking at what my kids are learning in school right now, and it's not financial literacy. I mean, they're learning, how do you balance a checkbook? How do you, you know, my younger one, how do you, you know, count money? You know, things like that, which is, sure, that's all important, but it's not going to set them up for success. It's not going to make them financially successful, you know, in their future. So yeah, I think that's how we come at it. And again, this time you're the hero, we've got the solutions, and that's where we're going to stand out.
Awesome.
Can you give them an idea of how, like in terms of money, like with the How Rich People Think book, mm-hmm. how we take the, it's always a kind of a point counterpoint thing. So whatever right. the point is, the story of the news cycle is, we take the minority point of view, and that's how we get on. The right. majority point of view, everyone's saying. Can you give me an idea, an example that you can think of from the money?
I mean, you know, maybe one of them, you know, for instance, we always said, you know, when it comes to money, most people, you know, are looking at money in terms of fear and scarcity. And you kind of come in and say, well, no, you know, the right way, the rich people, you know, are looking at money in terms of, you know, freedom and opportunity and possibility and abundance, you know, all the good things. Or another one might be, you know, most people, the masses are looking at money, you know, how many hours can I cram in the day? How much more work can I do? And you're like, you know, it's all about leverage. It's about leverage. Leveraging your contacts and, you know, making your money, you know, grow for you in different ways. It's not, sure, working hard is important, but it's not about, you know, burning that midnight oil and working, you know, 18, 19 hour days. I mean, sure, maybe in the beginning when you're first launching a business, as you know, but in terms of the long-term financial success, it's all about leverage.
You know, Steve, you've always said that solving problems was the thing that rich people do. They figure out what's the biggest problem I can solve, and they go solve it, right. and they become rich. I think for our entrepreneurs that are watching the show today, that are financial professionals, if they have this book, they could end up, that could be their path to solving the biggest problem society's facing right
Definitely.
Now and go from there.
And with the implication of you getting us out everywhere with it, now all of a sudden it gives it weight. It's what happened with How Rich People Think. I mean, the book did well to start, as you know, but it came right. out pretty strong. But then the media, all of a sudden, the Wall Street Journal picked it up. Then Money Magazine picked it up. And time, you know, and it just went on. And it's still 10 years or.
And that's because money later. Continues to dominate right. the headlines, and it'll right. never go away. This is going to continue, you know, long after we're gone.
Yeah.
Money is always going to be the big topic in the media.
Right.
And, you know, so the fact that, you know, you are financial professionals, you've got this book, we're always going to be able to play into those financial topics, and that's what I love about this. This is so great.
Is there an right. X factor that made your book hit like that? There's always like one book, right? All your books have been successful, but one kind of, you know, goes past expectations. What is the X factor that can make a book go from being, you know, really good success on the media to being something that makes a bigger splash and becomes maybe even evergreen?
Sure. You know, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, I think, you know, the big hook, I always think back to the work that we did together and, you know, all the outreach that we did. And the thing that always seemed to draw people and to draw journalists in was always that big case study. You know, whenever we said right. he did 1,200 interviews with millionaires, right. self-made millionaires over the last 30 plus years, that was always sort of the
one
hook.
One of them's right here. He's one of the millionaires I interviewed.
Exactly.
Over the years,
exactly. So that was always sort of the hook, I think, that you know, that drew them
that
in.
Extra element.
That extra element.
So now it's 35 years, 1,316 interviews. So, I mean, it's got some weight to it. You know what really picked up then, if you remember to begin with, was the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
They're the one. And, to answer your question from my point of view in terms of what took that book, the How Rich People Think book, it was successful to begin with, but then it sold over 1 million copies right. and it's in six languages and yada, yada, was Bruce. I mean, Bruce was really the engine behind it. Much like I think a lot of the success of the How Money Works book is going to be the engine behind it was Andy with all the fun and the colors and the characters and everything. So I think that's kind of, you called it the X factor. I think that's the X factor of the How Money Works book. And definitely, in my opinion, the How Rich People Think book was you were the X factor. And I think with the combination of what you've done with How Money Works and what you're going to do with the publicity with How Money Works, two X factors.
Well, one thing that's fascinating for me is that these financial principles are timeless, so they've never changed. The day I got in this business 38 years ago, they were the same. So what has changed is the brightness of the light we're putting on this. This is now going to be out there, and then, as you just said, with Andy helping us to show it in a simpler way, a more easy to absorb way if you have no background, the principle hasn't changed, so it's got the validity of something that's in concrete, it's the math. But then you add to it the ease of access to it, the understanding ability of it. Gosh, I just don't know how that doesn't become one of the biggest things ever. What parent, what friend, who wouldn't want somebody to know this? So it's not gonna be something you're just gonna read and say, well, maybe I'll do those things. You're gonna read it and go, no, everybody needs to know this. And so people are gonna become advocates for it almost just by reading of it. They're gonna wanna tell people, did you know if you did this, you could do that? And that's, it's always been that way, but now it's gonna become much more public.
I gotta say something though, I probably shouldn't do this on camera, but Harper called me the other day. Yeah, she's kind of tired of reading that book. She's like, I'm 9 months old. The only book grandpa will give me is the How Money Works book. Now she's a financial genius, of course. But,
you know. Now she wants to know if she can eat it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I won't tell you about the one she threw up on.
But you know, going back to your point, it's again, one of the biggest problems that we have in society is money, you know, and like you said, we have the solution, and that's what's going to make this so successful.
So for people to understand what you do, mm-hmm. you see the news cycles, and you know the book, and you know us and what we're doing, and so your role in this is you figure out how to put those two together. You figure out, so you have a proposal or a story you tell. Tell us how you do that.
Yeah, so it works a couple of ways. You know, number one, I've always got my eyes on the headlines. I'm always trying to see, you know, for my clients, what's going on in the world. How can we tie in, you know, my client's expertise with what's going on, what the media is covering.
And he's called me at 2 a.m. I'm not kidding. Get down to CNN in Atlanta. They're going to uplink you to New York in an hour and a half. Go now. Leave now. Are you leaving? I'm in my pajamas. It's 2 a.m. What do you mean? Yeah. No, seriously.
But no, and you know, with Steve, I think one of the reasons he's been so successful is because he calls me, you know, or I call him more than any of my other clients. You know, my wife jokes with me, oh, is that Siebold again? Is he calling you again, right?
BFF.
BFF, right. Exactly, but that's important to a publicity campaign, is staying on top of the headlines, seeing what's going on in the world, and then jumping on it, capitalizing on it, and you've got to be really quick. And the reason it's 2 a.m. is because if I didn't bother you at 2 a.m.
You need to sleep at some point.
I know, right? But if it's not 2 a.m, you know, we would have missed it, right, and somebody else would have gotten that opportunity.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, you've got to be there for them when the story's happening. Otherwise, right, you miss out and somebody else gets the opportunity.
Let's give them an example. Okay, so I'll give you a live example. So sure. I'll call Bruce up, and we haven't talked about this before, but I'm meaning to talk to you about this for the book. Okay, so right now in the news cycle, there's some things being said on Wall Street, as you know, about the inverted yield curve. Okay, so most people don't know what that is. It's bonds yielding a negative return, is basically. So that is not a really good sign. So now people, the economists say, well, we're headed toward recession if there's an inverted yield curve, because bonds are like negative 2% right now, okay? So let's say Ray Dalio comes out, billionaire Wall Street hedge fund guy, whatever. He has come out, actually, I just watched it this morning, and said, you know, we're recommending to some of our clients that they hedge their portfolio with gold. Okay, so I come out, I call Bruce up and say, just as an example, I call Bruce up and say, hey, Dalio, who's obviously, you know, the biggest hedge fund manager in Wall Street, a genius in my opinion, I'm a big fan of his anyway, but he says, we should be hedging our portfolios with gold to protect ourselves from recession because of the inverted yield curve, et cetera. And what I think, Bruce, is that's not right for the average person. Yeah, if you're a Wall Street hedge fund manager like Ray Dalio, multi-billionaire, great.
Right.
I'm Joe Lunchbucket making 50 grand a year teaching school. I don't even know what an inverted yield curve is. I don't think that's the way to play for the average person. What I think they should do is put that money into an insurance policy, and here's how it works, da, da, da. And I give them the details, which I won't go into, but my position, which will be a minority. I'm going up against a billionaire hedge fund manager, right? But my position is I'm talking to the average person, not to the people that Ray Dalio deals with, who are multimillionaires and billionaires on Wall Street.
So true.
So now the pitch, this is the pitch. So Bruce goes, okay, let me write it up and I'll get back to you in 20 minutes. And then he sends the emails to me. And what would the pitch say on that?
So the pitch would basically, you know, everything that you just fed me, all your talking points that you just gave me, I'll kind of put them, you know, the words onto the computer, type it up, you know, make it, you know, a little more fun, a little more interesting, really grab their attention.
It wasn't interesting?
Well, it's interesting, but, you know, make it.
Thanks, Bruce. That's why I call you the librarian.
He yawns and he gets to work.
Exactly. And then we, you know, just put it out to, you know, to my database of financial journalists.
So tell them what it would kind of say, though. Just give like an idea of like the basic pitch.
You know, it would just basically, you know, give an intro of what's going on, what the story is, and then, you know, we kind of go to you and, you know, hey, Steve Siebold, he's the author of, you know, How Rich People Think, and now, you know, How Money Works, and he's been interviewing, you know, self-made millionaires for the last 30 plus years, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as you're covering this story today, Steve can talk about, and then boom, 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 go into the bullet points. And then just we wrap it up. Hey, would you like to speak to Steve? Let me know. I'm happy to set that up.
Right. So now if they buy the pitch, pitch, then what they'll do is Bruce will call me back. Usually it takes 10 or 15 minutes if they buy it right away.
Right.
He sends it out to everywhere, and then he'll call me and say, look, okay, they got CNBC as Ray. They picked it up. Ray Dalio's coming in to debate you. You're going to be in the studio in Atlanta on the uplink. Dalio's in New York, of course. He'll be on the set, and you're going to be on for 5.5 minutes when the narrator is Maria Bartiromo, and go to the studio. And then, boom, we're on there, and all of a sudden, 2 million people are watching me debate Ray Dalio, and the book is, they introduced me as the author of How Money Works, and they put the picture of the book up there, and that's the value to all
that's
of us.
That's it right
there. How do you do it from here, Steve? You go downtown, or you have a thing at your home, or how do you?
They tell Bruce whatever they want. Now, sometimes we'll be there. Bruce, they'll say, well, is Steve, when's the next time he's going to be in New York? Bruce will say, gee, I think he might be in New York right now.
He's there right now.
He's like, you get to New York right now. We've done that a lot of times.
We've done that.
We've gotten on a lot of shows, or L.A.
Get out of your pajamas.
Yeah. And they'll call me, they're like, where are you? I'm like, I'm in the airport. Going to, where am I, Bruce? Bruce, where am I? Am I in LaGuardia or am I in Atlanta?
Did that with the Today Show. I'll never forget that. The producer said to me, well, when's he going to be in New York? I said, he's going to be there tomorrow.
He's like, get to New York
Steve,
now.
Steve, get to New York.
Exactly. It's kind of crazy. But the value to all of us, of course, we were trying to sell books, of course. That's not the goal of, as we talked about, How Money Works. We're selling it at the price we're selling it. There's just barely enough to cover the printing, and that's fine. But the value to all of us is passing these books out, as you've been talking about for so long, and you talked about in the Tomalog today, is that now they see all of a sudden, I'm on TV, just as an example, to stick with the example I just used, all of a sudden I'm on TV debating the biggest hedge fund manager in the world. Am I at that same level as him? Are we all at the same level? No one is. But all of a sudden, I'm on a split screen with Ray Dalio debating this back and forth, and we're going back and forth for 5 minutes, and they show the cover of the book. And they go, well, there must be some, that book must be big enough to justify debating a hedge fund manager. That not, all of a sudden, you give that book to a prospect, and they say, I just saw this on CNBC. This must be pretty good. It's an it's not a literal endorsement, but it's an implied endorsement of the credibility and, how good the book really is at the end of the day.
And then the thing is whether you're right or wrong, we know you're right most of the time, right? But right or wrong, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Being able to take, that clip or that image from the screen that shows the How Money Works book up with CNBC,
right.
That's the value right there. That's the credibility.
Here's our thing, and we've said all over the world together as we've done this, we've talked on stages all over about this because we've had a lot of success with it, is that we don't want to necessarily win the argument when we're debating in the media. We don't want to win it necessarily. We just want to have the argument. We want to be in the argument. We can lose. We still get the same publicity whether we win, lose, or draw, as long as the premise of our argument is credible. It can't be some... just a scintillating thing that's right. Sort of or a scandalous kind of thing or argumentative kind of, just for the sake of getting
publicity. Well, because we've all learned this in the media in this past administration, right? It doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong.
Right.
People that, your constituents, people that agree with you, they're going to point to it and say, see, this is the point I've been trying to make. Whether people believe they won or lost that debate, right?
Right.
We're going to connect with it. And I think that's what's going to happen with our agents, right? The people that are part of, the business we work with. And then a lot of people that are the Joe Lunchbox guys, right? They're going to be like, this other guy's talking about this, but I connect with what he's saying.
Right.
And to be able to just show that.
Yeah, I don't live in the world of billionaires. We're talking about the average person watching this show or reading this book that's trying to put their kid through school. They're trying to pay their mortgage. They're not buying islands in the Pacific.
Right.
That's all great for them. And that's one of the positions we're going to take is, hey, it's all great for Wall Street. What about Main Street? What about the teacher, the cop, the fireman, the public service worker, the people that we rely on, whether you're rich or poor or in between? What about them? Those people have all made their money on Wall Street. What about the average person? It's time we go back and help the average person. And that's why we wrote this book, that kind of a premise.
What does this mean to the agents, Tom, that, seeing Steve connected to How Money Works, which connects to their business and all that's happening in the media, what does that mean for the agents?
I think it's validation. We say we're disrupting the financial industry so families can dream again. Well, what does that mean? Well, I think you being on TV or this being in an article or something, that's a visual, that's a reading disruption. The things we're going to be saying are really counter because, as we say in the book, somebody who knows about money takes advantage of somebody who doesn't know about money. So you just have one choice, learn about money or be taken advantage of.
Right.
And absolutely. So... That premise gives us such an edge, and then to add to take the validity and wrap it with credibility. So, like I said before, somebody may not have heard of us or the book yet, but they've certainly heard of the shows. I was going to ask you, what are some of the shows that, you know, we showed a few on the screen there. Mm-hmm. Tell us some of the shows you've had Steve and this message of his on.
I think the question is, what shows haven't we?
Right? Yeah. All the major ones, yeah.
Yeah,
many
seriously.
Times, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's two answers to that. You know, when it's a big day of financial type of story, you know, that's when we're focusing on the bigger national, you know, Fox Business. You know, how many times have you been on with Stuart Varney, for instance?
21 times.
There you
go. Not that I'm counting.
Not that you're counting, right? I lost track.
It was worth a little money. Right. Like my last house.
Right. So when it's something that's big and breaking, like the example you just gave, that's something like a Fox Business, CNBC, Bloomberg kind of a thing.
Right.
But then what we're doing also on the other side of it, I guess it's more the consumer side of it, is when you're traveling. When you call me up and you say, hey, Bruce, I'm going to be in, you know, Los Angeles in 2 or 3 weeks. You know, can you get me on a morning show? Well, then we're kind of going after, I guess what you'd call the softer side of it. You know, the more consumer side, you know, targeting parents with kids and or more of the psychological, how, you know, how to think about money, how rich people think. So that's really what we're trying to do in terms of TV shows. But I mean, in terms of outlets, I seriously think it's been most of them. It's crazy.
Yeah, and print and web.
Oh, yeah. Boy. I mean, and the web these days, I mean, when something does get in print, it also, you know, goes online. And it's just, and that gives it the ability to live forever and to just go all over the world.
And boomerangs all over the world.
And you link to it constantly.
Oh, show it's almost better than television.
It almost
not
is.
Not as sexy, but better.
Right. TV always has
eyeballs.
That sex appeal. But yeah. I would rather you be in, you know, remember Business Insider, for instance.
Geez, yeah.
You know, we had, Steve had many articles in Business Insider, but I'll never forget one of them, and they were talking, it was just a very simple article on the differences, you know, how the masses think versus how wealthy people think. And if you remember, the book shot to number 31, not just in its category, but number
all
31
books.
Of all
just
books.
From the just from a web article?
Well, it made the cover of MSN for 4.5 hours.
And
I
Yahoo,
was on the cover. And
it went everywhere, that's all over the world.
Yahoo Finance picked it up, everybody.
Everywhere.
Talk about that for a second, how you can have an article, maybe it's in the Wall Street Journal, and the next thing you know, it's in every publication in some form or another for a while. I've noticed a lot of your articles, they do that.
Yeah,
they do. You know, these days they all have these agreements. A lot of them pick up, you know, what somebody runs, they all have agreements that, you know, another outlet, you know, like the bigger ones, MSN, Yahoo Finance, they can all kind of feed from that and pick up a lot of that. And so it's sort of like double exposure. You know, Business Insider has a huge audience to begin with, but then when you put it on something like MSN or Yahoo Finance, I mean, the numbers are ridiculous. How many people that article is
talking
being...
about those numbers. What kind of numbers could we expect from something?
They're
like
ridiculous.
That?
They're ridiculous.
That sounds good by
ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, you've seen them. I've shared them with you. Millions of, you know, because when you think about how many people are on the web, how many people are on their websites and going to Yahoo, going to MSN, I mean, I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but it's in the millions. You've seen them. It's in the millions.
Would you say we hit about 50 million people a year over the 10 years?
At least. Yeah. At least. It's been crazy.
Are there any shows that you think that you haven't been able to get Steve on that you think that you can get him on with this book?
Trying to think.
You said the list is pretty small, right?
It is. Not, you know,
for the big shows, it's small.
For the big shows,
maybe Kelly. We never got on Kelly and whoever she's with now. Kelly and the host.
Is it Ryan
Seacrest?
Ryan Seacrest.
We never got on that.
Never got on that one.
For whatever reason,
or The View. But
The View, we never got.
Never on The View.
Yeah,
but
there's a few.
But we've done Today.
I could see this on The View.
Yeah, it could definitely be on there.
It could. Yeah.
Usually we're combative, you know, we're taking, like I was going to ask you to talk about Trump, because we got at least another year, this is media-wise, not politically, but media-wise, Trump obviously is a lightning rod, and he controls the news cycles almost as for 3 or 4 years, whatever it's been, right? So we talk about this all the time, because obviously he talks about the economy all the time, and he knows almost nothing about the economy, in my opinion, or about money, for that matter. You know, he makes a lot of money, but I don't think he really understands how money works, like my experience with him over the years. Talk about how we talk about that, you know, CNBC is on one end, right? And CNN maybe a little bit. And then you got Fox on the other. Fox loves them, CNBC hates them. So can you talk about how we go against them on one and with them on the other?
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, this is just a strategy Bruce created. It's genius.
Yeah, you know, sometimes depending on what the message is of the client, you know, Steve, I'd say on financial topics, you're probably more to the right side, maybe socially more to the left.
Right.
And, you know, it just depends. So I have to be be careful, you know, when I'm pitching an
outlet. You don't know exactly where I'm.
I know where you are. I know where you are.
He writes it. I think I wrote it. I mean,
but it's sort of just to give them, you know, to know what the producer at that network is looking for. So a producer at Fox News, for instance, isn't going to be necessarily looking for the same thing as that producer at, say, you know, MSNBC or CNBC, you know, that's more on the left side. So we have to just kind of tweak it a little bit to fit the message to the audience of who we're pitching.
Basically. So if we go, in other words, the to summarize it, if it's something that I'm going against Trump on, Bruce pitches against to Fox because they love Trump. So now I'm the minority person. If it's something for Trump, we think Trump, President Trump is right. Politics, society's right about the money thing, blah, blah, blah. We go to CNBC who hates Trump and CNN who hates Trump. So they want the minority opinion. So we just play one off the other. And Bruce is brilliant at this. He's the master. I've never seen a publicist that's better than that.
And again, at the end of the day, it's not really, like you said, it's not if we win the debate, if we lose the debate, it's we're having that debate.
We're on the show.
We're on the show. Yeah. And that's what's so important.
As long as you stick with a coherent argument that some people go, yeah, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, I can see where he's coming from. That's all we need. We don't need to win. We just need to be on it.
Yeah.
That opens up a lot of avenues that other guests won't go on because they want to win. They want to know, and you maybe talk about this for a second. They want to know it's a slam dunk they're going to win. Like when that producer, we did hardball with Chris Matthews that time. The producer, remember he called me? Producers don't call guests. That doesn't happen unless you're in the studio or the green room. But he called me at my house before we did it. He said, you know you're going to get killed. You're going to get absolutely crushed with this. And Smirkanish is going to be on there. And David Korn from Mother Jones Magazine was on. Yep. These guys are after you. You know you're going to get killed. And I said, it's okay. I have a point to make. I'm going to make it. And I'll probably get beat, but that's okay. And he says, okay, great. We'll put you on. You know, but with 3 million people watch that show. And then it went all over the internet.
Yeah, I had somebody call me up after that interview, and he's like, wow, you know, he's like, Siebold must be pretty pissed at you today. I'm like, well, why is that? He's like, he got killed in that interview. I'm like, no, he didn't. He had the interview. Right. I'm like, who else?
We win.
Know, we win.
We win if we lose.
We win if we lose. I'm like, he's a happy guy today.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
I think I was buying that night.
You know, one of the things I've always wanted to ask someone like you, for the whole time I've been doing this, nobody's ever heard of what we do most of the time. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things they say to us is, if this is so good, why have I never heard of it? You know, whether it's one of our products or even our business model. And I think that this is going to give us a chance to have, well, you may not have heard it, but have you heard of New York Times or Wall Street Journal or CNBC or Fox News or Business Insider, whatever the current one, we'll have an article. This is what they said yesterday about what we're doing. That's got to give a credibility to this that we've never had before.
Yeah, tell me about the celebrity thing, how that works out. Because I'm not a celebrity, just in my own mind. Of course I am, but to you, yeah.
Huge
celebrity. So we joke about this all the time. But if you're a celebrity, then it's about the celebrity. Then, if I were Tom Cruise or someone famous like that, then it would be about me, which would not help all of us with the How Money Works book. Because then it's about a person. It's like you cult of personality, like you say, like Trump is kind of a cult of personality. But I'm not. Nobody, I can walk down Main Street anywhere, no one knows who I am. So it becomes about the argument and the book, so especially, not about the personality. They go, well, I don't know who the guy was, the guest, but this How Money Works looks pretty good. And then someone handed it to me 2 weeks ago, and I just saw it on, who was the guy on the show? I don't know. I think it was the guy that was co-op. I don't know his name. But anyway, the book is great. That's one of the reasons it's going to be so powerful.
Right. Like here in Atlanta, I could pick up the phone and call Good Day Atlanta, for instance, right? And I could say, hey, I got Tom Cruise. You know, oh, yeah, bring him in. We want to have Tom Cruise.
Right.
I say, oh, I got Steve Siebold and Tom Matthews. Sorry. No, no.
Who's that? Right? That's exactly right.
Well, then they're going to say, well, who the heck is Steve Siebold and Tom Matthews?
Right.
Well, you know, I tell them about, you know, what you know, this book and, you know, the things that you're trying to do and the topics that you talk about. Oh, that's kind of interesting, you know, and that's how we do it. We focus on the bigger topic. What are you an expert in? What are the things you can speak about? And most importantly, I think, you know, how can you help their audience? How can you help a viewer watching that show learn something or take away something, you know, from that interview?
Oh, there's one more genius thing he does he won't brag about. Then he goes, oh, by the way, and at the end of the email, because he copies me on all the pitches to the studios, he'll say, or the stations, he'll say, oh, by the way, here's Steve's last 5 appearances on Good Day Atlanta.
I was just going to say that.
And then today's show on Good Morning America, and this one, the BBC.
Right.
So then it's like, really? So they see all the times they interview me.
What role does that play? How does that help the fact that you guys have been doing this for all these years, and he's been on so many shows? Does that give us the credibility almost assumed?
It really makes a difference because if you go to a TV producer, you know, and, you know, you get them interested, they like what you're pitching them, they'll come back and they'll say, yeah, I really like this, you know, I think we'd like to set this up. Oh, by the way, has your client ever been on television before? Have they ever been in a studio? Because that producer wants to make sure that you're not just going to freeze up on camera, right? They want to make sure that not only is your topic good, not only are you a true expert in what you do, but that when they mic you up and put you in the studio, that you know you're going to deliver a good, solid interview. So when I pitch Steve to the media, I always like to show a producer, you know, the last couple of clips, and his are really good. I mean, this guy is super talented on camera, so it helps. It really helps. He's one of the best. So yeah, I'm giving that producer an idea of how good he is, and it helps them sort of visualize, you know, they see how other segments have played out, and now they're thinking, okay, they're getting some ideas for how they can approach it and how they can produce their segment.
Does that mean that they kind of check that off? This guy's going to do good on camera. So now they're thinking more about the pitch and the book and the...
Exactly. It really makes a big difference. Again, not to say, you know, I've had, you know, instances where, you know, I've had somebody and they don't have a lot of TV experience, and we've gotten by. But I'll be honest, I've lost some interviews because the producer just didn't want to put that person, that first timer on. You know, the thinking is, well, if you're a first timer, you should be starting off in a smaller media market. Mm-hmm. You know, build up your experience, get your confidence under your belt, you know, become comfortable with the process. Because being on TV, it is a pressure situation, as you know. It can be intimidating. It can be overwhelming. So, yeah, that's what I say. You know, when somebody doesn't have television experience, start off in smaller markets, get those clips under your belt, so then you can approach producers at bigger TV studios, bigger TV stations around the country.
One of the questions you say that you're going to get, most likely, Steve, was how is this book different than other money books? Have you thought about that? Obviously you have.
We've talked about this for months.
What's the forming strategy there?
Just because this is what the editor of Money Magazine, I had this conversation maybe a month ago, or I talked to you about it. So the editor of Money Magazine, one of the editors called me that put the Secrets of Self-Made Millionaires, yeah. Teach Your Kids, on the cover. And she said, so what's your new book? And I told him about the How Money Works book. And she said, well, what makes it different? You know, we get all these money books, they're published every year, financial books. I mean, some sell, some don't. And I said, this is a book a 14-year-old child literally could read, would probably enjoy, and could implement if they could make investments at 14. I mean, it's really that simple. And she said, I need to see that book. I want to see the book. How fast can you get me the book? And I just sent it to her a couple weeks ago. The one edition, not the essentials, but the other one. So the simplicity of it, and that's why I say I think what you brought to it, Andy, is the genius of it, because you took the words that Tom and I wrote and you simplified and you made it fun and you put characters and everything. And that hasn't been done before. And I think that's what Joe Lunchbuck, the average person, and I don't mean that like in a derogatory way. I just mean the average person making an average income, struggling not with, you know, what they're going to do with their yacht in the Hampton this weekend, you know, how many people are attending the party. You know, they're worried about paying their bills. And this is a book that person can read and succeed with. You know, we're not teaching them to trade derivatives on Wall Street. That's not the point. We're teaching them to follow those 7 money milestones, get their stuff together so they can enjoy their life and not worry about money for the rest of their life.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, I think from a media perspective, you know, a lot of financial books, they're a little dry, they're a little, you know, over the average person's head. This is fun. I mean, I picked it up the first time I read it, and I was like, wow, this is, you know, I'm getting into this. You know, I could see my kids reading this. You know, it was fun, it was informative, it was interesting.
Wait, and you got excited about this book? You actually
I showed
emotion.
I did.
The librarian.
I love this. Good job.
So you're going to be able to say that basically to the people you're lining up for this.
Right.
You pitch it, you'll be able to put that on it.
Exactly, because I think, you know, especially with a lot of morning TV, you know, sometimes they'll say, well, money, is that really exciting? Are we just going to have two people sitting, you know, the anchor and the host and the guest sitting there, and, you know, are they just going to be talking about financial principles or what's going to be going on? And this gives me the ability to say, no, this is really different. This is going to be fun. This is going to really get the attention of your viewers, and at the same time, it's going to teach them some basic money concepts that they can really benefit from.
And so what we're doing is we're tailoring the approach that we take and the pitch that Bruce makes to the media to the medium itself. So if it's a lifestyle show, like Today's Show or Good Morning America, where the, you know, there's people at home, you know, stay-at-home moms are watching it, we're not going to take a hard line against the hedge fund manager on Wall Street or, you know, the financial industry and really hammer them. We're going to take some fun, easygoing, 3 steps to teach your child in high school, your kid in high school, about money that would really help them. Something fun, light, and, but if we go on, like, the Wall Street Journal show we've done a bunch of times, you know, we've done that, we've Skyped that one a bunch of times. Well, hardball Chris Matthews, some of the real hard, Fox Business with Stuart Varney. Yeah. I mean, we hit them hard. We get in debates with them. So we're chameleons. We sound up, Bruce has taught me that over the last 10 years, to kind of play it based on the medium as opposed to just the message.
Right. Yeah. You've got to be really careful what you're pitching and who you're pitching it to, because the same pitch, you know, your outreach for, like you said, Good Morning America, that's not going to work for Stuart Birney.
Right. Exactly.
Totally.
Never put us on.
Never.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think that every parent in the world has a dream. One of the first dreams you have as a parent is that you could have your children have a better life than you. And I think one of the reasons the million-dollar baby thing has taken off like it has is because people look at that and they think, gosh, that'd be incredible if half the people have nothing saved for retirement, and I could assure that my child would have a seven-figure retirement plus whatever they do their life, maybe they could have a different life if they weren't burdened with the worries about money. And then, of course, if we teach them about money and you add that to the mix, well, that's got to be something that every parent kind of leans into.
Right.
And says, boy, I'd like to know more about that. Yeah, and if it's never too late, because it's never too late, there's an amount of money at a certain return over a certain time, you can do anything. You just got to, who you strategize with and what you put together and what product and how do you do it, how you pay for it.
And that's a good point. You know, speaking of families, I mean, there's a huge, you know, in the media, you know, journalists that cover families, motherhood, fatherhood, children, kids, teenagers, you know, infants. So this gives us the ability to kind of take the message and tailor it now, you know, to a different audience. And that's what's so green. You know, we can take the topic of money, but we're not just putting it out to financial journalists. We can go after those, you know, motherhood, fatherhood, parenting journalists that cover those topics too. So we're really trying to get coverage for this all over the place.
And then Bruce coaches me like, okay, it's a family magazine. Be nice now, be nice. And then we'll go to New York. I said, go after him completely. Start out right away and go after him. Spin the coin. So he's coaching me, and we go from being completely aggressive to completely passive in one, and sometimes from interview to interview during the course of the day. It's really kind of, you know, I don't know who I am sometimes. But he coaches me because he knows the medium so well. And we're talking about thousands of these mediums, whether it's print or internet or, you know, TV, radio, whatever. We work them all. And that your coaching has been, yeah, you know, you're just the best there is. I've never seen anybody do that. And that's one of the reasons it's been so successful.
Well, so you said maybe we might look at the first year we do this. Would 100 million be too much to think of that we could hit that many people with something?
It's possible. I mean, geez. I mean, especially with some of these larger outlets. I mean, you know, you get on there and it's
in this subject.
I mean, again, I can't say enough about the subject.
Yeah.
The subject. It's just, you know, because that's really important as a publicist. The subject that somebody's, you know, what is their expertise? That's really, really important. And again, money is something that affects everybody. Everybody in, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And unfortunately, most people, like you said, are struggling with it. So to come in and to have the solution and to be the good guys for a change,
this is awesome.
Great. This is really, really great.
I'm really a nice guy down deep, you know, but I just don't play one on TV. what do you think in terms of, okay, so maybe the 100 million, we're looking at that in terms of, you know, eyeballs a year. How, in terms of duration, how long can this go on with our system together with this book? What's your take?
I mean, this thing could live forever because, again, you know, that's the mistake I think most people make when they look at a publicity campaign. They're like, well, how do you keep a book, you know, in the media 2 years, 3 years, 4 years after it came out? And again, it's not about the book.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's about the topic.
It's about the topic.
And, you know, the book will always be there as that credibility factor that'll help differentiate you, help you break in. But we're playing into the topic of money. We're playing into finances. And that's not going away anytime soon.
Well, how rich people thinks 10 years. We've been 10 years into it. That's why I keep selling.
Because
it's in the, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Even when we don't pitch, it still gets proliferated on the internet. It's just the craziest damn thing.
Yeah.
One of the things we talk when we actually hand out the book to people in kind of our testing, there's a lot of people, especially young people in their 20s, 30s, who say, I cannot believe you guys put Stop Being a Sucker on the cover of the book. And, you know, we were, you know, we in our meetings at this dive restaurant over here, we were talking about the book. And Steve would come to the lunch and he'd be like, so Bruce doesn't like our subject line, you know, our subtitle's kind of crap. We need to boost that up a little bit. So we're like working on it. What were your thoughts there, Steve, working with Bruce about the subject line and trying to get to sell him on it?
Well, I can hear him saying it. Bruce won't say, I don't like her. He'll go, well, gee, I don't. It's like going to the library. He'd be like, he's very soft-spoken. Geez. And that means he hates it. He goes, well, that's pretty good. But if he likes it, he'll go, that's really good. That'll work. I can use that. So then we said,
that's how you say it's crap to a client, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But he says, yeah, he kind of does that. But when I said, stop being a sucker, he's like, oh, yeah, that'll work. We can get that.
You know, basically, you want something that's going to grab somebody's attention. When they see stop being a sucker, it's like, wow, you know, I might not love that, I might not agree with it, but it gets my attention. It really just grabs me that I want to learn more. And that's how a journalist is going to think. You know, it's not just, look, there's a lot of money books, there's a lot of books out there on so many topics. And sometimes, you know, I'll even go as far, and I think you would agree, that the title of your book is just as important as what's in the book. Yeah. And so when, you know, you've got that lollipop, stop being a sucker. I mean,
that's that was Andy's idea to put that lollipop right in the front.
It's great because it's going to grab someone. They might not like it, but it's going to get their attention. And that's what's so important.
I had only met you once at that point. When he came back and said that you liked the subtitle, I was just like, yes, he likes the subtitle.
And yes. I was drawing the sucker as the words were coming out of my mouth. Am I lying?
He really was.
I mean, we're saying, stop being a sucker. He's like, I got the sucker right here. It's green. It's got the thing going. He's drawing it at the table.
There's pencils everywhere. I got them in every pocket.
He's like pulling them out, you know, sleeves. Yeah, absolutely.
He really did.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great.
Anything else? Well, let me ask you this, because you're hearing all this stuff, and I know it's a lot to take in. This is like 10 years of him teaching me how to do this, and, you know, it's just been an, I mean, you've won every award you can win for the campaigns, right? We've done.
Yeah, pretty much.
He can't win anymore. He gets trophies. He's like, yeah, put that one in the closet. I got enough. Because it just keeps going. It just hasn't stopped for 10 years straight. When you hear all this stuff and you put it through your 38 years of experience in this industry, you know, in financial marketing, and, you know, what's your take to the audience in terms of how do you amalgamize all this? Is that right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Well,
and then
it makes me think the same thing that I think a consumer thinks when they get our book is, now I have a chance. And I think that a business owner, an entrepreneur, figures out that now he or she could have media, a book, leadership, all these things. Well, man, the odds have shifted in your favor now. Doesn't make being an entrepreneur easy, but it's easier, and maybe never been easier to be successful than it would be with all this combined together. The strength of our product providers and their products, the strength of our message, the backing of our administrative company and all the things they do for us, combined with media, a new marketing tool, leadership, vision, strategy, put all that together. A new person comes here with just their desire and their heart, and they want to be successful and they want to work hard. Here, follow this path. It's a little bit of a new path because things evolve. We live in the 21st century now. It's actually two decades into it now. So it's not the old days when things were just manual and paper, and it's online, it's media, it's TV, but how do you get that in your business? We figured that out. With your help and your help, obviously, we've broken the code to get people into the modern times.
And, you know, that's what's so important that I want all of your, you know, advisors to understand. You know, it might not be them on television, right? It's going to be Steve, it's going to be Tom on TV, but they're a part of this. This is about WealthWave. This is about how money works, and they can leverage you guys. They can leverage this book. They can leverage the media as much as you. So I don't want them to think, well, it's not me, this doesn't help me. It 100% helps them, because they need to leverage this. It's so big.
Especially because we're not celebrities. If we were celebrities, it would be more difficult, because they would just look at the celebrities. But we're going to disappear into the background, and the book is going to be forefront.
Right. This is the first time, and you've talked about this, is the first time in your business, you guys have done some really big things. You know, you beat the biggest life insurance agency in the country. You've done all kinds of crazy things in your career, but that you've said that this is the first time that you've had something like this where it's going to go mainstream. It's going to be viewed, visible, mainstream. What does that mean? What does that change?
Well, I think the credibility it adds, you know, to have a new person that doesn't have years or decades of experience have a book with credibility, and now the validation of media and the leveraging of the publicity of that, we're just so thankful for what you're doing for us.
Thank you.
It's going to be awesome. Bruce, thanks for coming to the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's going to be awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate
it.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you guys for coming. We're going to have a great show next week. We're going to have documentary filmmaker from Palm Beach, Florida, Rod Morton, on the show next week. You guys are going to love this documentary he made about business in America. It's great stuff. Thanks for coming, guys. We appreciate it. See you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to Leadership Now, WealthWave's official podcast. If you like this episode and want to hear more, check out wealthwave.com/podcast or Leadership Now on iTunes. Join us each week to grow as an entrepreneur and succeed as a leader in the financial business with WealthWave.